We're looking at brains being wired differently, which is much more validating and compassionate. The ADHD brain, and to a large extent the autistic brain, is driven by interest, by novelty, by stress, and by challenge. That's different to the neurotypical brain that is driven by doing the right thing. The ADHD brain likes to be stimulated. It's hard to juggle lots of things. Our brain, we all have limits. But the ADHD brain is more than just struggling to juggle.
Hey, hey, and welcome to the 40s Formula, your go-to place for insightful discussions on navigating the 40s and thriving in this transformative decade.
We're your hosts, Jasmine and Amanda, two women that are passionate about exploring the challenges and adventures that come with turning 40 and what lies ahead.
Dr. Emma Waddington is a UK-trained clinical psychologist with 20 years of experience in mental health. She is the founder and clinical director of Us Therapy, where she works with individuals, couples, children, and families, helping them navigate challenges such as anxiety, perfectionism, depression, sleep disorders, anger management, and behavioral difficulties. She draws on evidence-based approaches, including cognitive behavioral therapy and acceptance and commitment therapy. Emma has a particular interest in ADHD women, recognizing how often it is undiagnosed and how frequently it coexists with anxiety. She is passionate about increasing awareness and understanding of ADHD, especially in populations where it has historically been overlooked. Before moving into private practice, Emma was an adjunct associate professor at National University of Singapore's Master of Clinical Psychology program, where she taught and mentored aspiring psychologists for 5 years. Emma is also a podcast host and author, dedicated to making psychological insights accessible and engaging. Having moved 8 times and lived in 5 countries before settling in the UK for her studies, she understands firsthand the complexities of growing up across cultures. Holding both British and Spanish nationalities, she brings a global perspective to her work, particularly in supporting the expatriates and third culture families. So today on the 40s Formula, we're joined by Emma Waddington, a clinical psychologist, and we are going to be talking about ADHD in women. When it comes to ADHD, I think the picture that gets painted in most people's mind is a hyperactive little boy who is being disruptive in class. But a lot of women and girls don't get the diagnosis they need. Why do you think that is, Emma?
For a very long time, we've all thought of ADHD as the boy who has ants in their pants. And actually, there's been we've got a manual called the Diagnostic Statistical Manual, the DSM, which as psychologists we use to diagnose. And the last edition, which is the 5th, and they're now doing a revised edition, changed some of the diagnoses and made it much broader. And that has allowed for us to think about women more. But most of the research originally was done on boys and men. Like most of the DSM, the original research was on men. And so when we thought of ADHD, we're really looking at the diagnostic criteria as it pertains to men. And more recently, we've recognized that women are quite different when they present with ADHD, and girls. And partly we think about it from the perspective of socializing girls. From a young age, we're told to be good girls, to behave. So girls are very good at what we call masking. So kind of like camouflaging, hiding some of the hyperactivity. So quite early on, girls realize that they can't be agitated and running around. And in classroom, teachers recognize the girls that sit quietly and do their worksheets and are good girls. Boys tend to have a little bit more leniency when it comes to misbehavior. Girls don't. So what we know is that early on, girls are recognizing that they need to restrain their hyperactivity. And so what we find is it goes inside. And so girls, and it varies through what we're also seeing from the research in ADHD is that as we go through different stages in life, it presents slightly differently. So you see in girls, we start to have more hyperactive thoughts. The agitation is internal. not external. So you might not be as fidgety physically, but you're more fidgety emotionally. So we see that agitation emotionally. So you see the teenage girls, you know, getting really, really angry and upset, struggling socially because they're not quite picking up the cues in the same way. They're not attending to the same things that they need to. So that's what you see with ADHD in girls, is that they start to mask from about the age of 12, 13, 14. And they develop ways of coping with this internal agitation, with some of their forgetfulness, mm-hmm. when some of their difficulty regulating their attention, and they develop ways of coping. And so then we fast forward through life, and you can see some women with ADHD sort of become perfectionistic, have lots of structure. We sometimes call it the ADHD piles of to-do lists. And they might create very rigid structure that allows them to cope, to handle some of what we call that executive functioning deficits or difficulties. But then it gets to a point in life, and that's why we're seeing an increase in diagnosis around the age of 30 or 40, when the load just gets too high. It's when we see that women are, you know, getting higher up in their career, having children, you know, multiple relationships. They may have been through various marriages, and life is just getting really, really complicated. That's when they seek help. And it's often help for anxiety and depression, not for ADHD. That's what I'm seeing. So I'm seeing women who present with really struggling with perfectionism, burnout, just their mood is dropping. And that's often because they've had a life of self-criticism. What's wrong with me that I'm always late? What's wrong with me that I can't quite figure this out, and I'm finding myself working so hard but never feeling like I'm enough? And that criticism accumulates, and it gets to a point where we start to feel depressed. And so we see adult women with ADHD who present more with anxiety and depression instead of ADHD. But when we start to dig in, we realize that these problems have been there forever. That as a young girl, they were pedaling so fast just to keep up. And that as an adult woman, they're now tired and burning out and have had enough.
Can I ask a really obvious question? So first of all, I want to be clear that ADHD is attention deficit hyperactivity disorder. And then I remember back, you know, in the day, if you will, there was ADD, attention deficit disorder. Are we, when you're referring to ADHD, are you referring to ADD interchangeably, or is that part of the DSM update that there is no more ADD?
There is no more. Well, there's two types. Okay. You can have the attention or hyperactivity, that there's basically, essentially now we know that ADD, there's some people who present more with attentional issues. And I don't like to call it a deficit. We're moving out of that.
Okay.
We're now thinking more that it's an attention regulation issue.
Oh, interesting.
I mean, somebody with ADHD can hyperfocus incredibly well. So it's not an attention problem. It's a problem of regulating attention. We're attending to the wrong things. We're attending to the thing that matters to us most versus not being able to attend. So sort of if we look at the diagnostic criteria, you know, lack of focus, difficulty organizing, careless mistakes. But often that can be attributed to the fact that we're attending to certain cues and not others, to certain interests and not others. So we do have two subtypes, the attention subtype and the hyperactivity subtype. And you can get, obviously, they can have both subtypes or just leaning on one or the other. And with women, we see that there's more of the attention subtype. Only because hyperactivity is seen, well, the diagnostic criteria looks at it more externally. But when you speak to women who have ADHD and you say, does your mind feel like a popcorn machine? Like thoughts are just popping away? They'll go, yeah. And that's the hyperactivity gone inside. Like there's the agitation that they feel that often then results in emotional dysregulation and frustration because they can't quite handle their thinking.
I think now I'm just like starting to question myself, like, oh shit, am I ADHD? Do I have ADHD? Just because my thought process is sometimes all over the place. But then I wonder, is it ADHD? Is it just because there's so much going on, then you've got your so many things calling for your attention? You know, you've got social media, you've got your kids, you've got your family, you've got work, got the podcast. You know, there's so much stuff.
For example.
So much stuff going on. Could it just be that we've changed, the kind of world that we live in has changed? Our bodies just haven't, our mind just hasn't caught up to the current lifestyle that we're living in?
I do think that we are all quite overwhelmed.
Yeah.
Now, the difference with somebody who presents with ADHD is that this isn't just a contextual issue. Mm-hmm. Like, this isn't something that you're just struggling with today.
Mm.
It's described as a developmental condition in that you've always had it. And I really love the movement that we're having now in the world of psychology, this more neuroaffirming, which we're looking at neurodivergence. Mm-hmm. So as opposed to a disorder, we're thinking that we're looking at brains being wired differently, which is much more validating and compassionate. So when we think about an ADHD brain under this umbrella of neurodivergence, or the autistic brain, or we have the epileptic brain is under that umbrella as well, they're wired differently. So they're driven by different things. So, and I find that really helpful for my ADHD community to recognize that the ADHD brain and to a large extent, the autistic brain is driven by interest, by novelty, by stress, and by challenge. Now, that's different to the neurotypical brain that is driven by doing the right thing or driven by a sense of belonging or doing what's expected. The ADHD brain likes to be stimulated, which means that one of the problems we have when there's a lot going on is that the ADHDer will choose to do what's novel, what's new, what's interesting, what's challenging, what's stressful, versus what has to be done just because. Mm. Like your chores or your admin. So you have an ADHDer who can, you know, pull off a fantastic podcast, but they'll really struggle to do their taxes or organize the day-to-day pickups of the kids. So that's quite different. So in terms of functioning, we think of, you know, the overwhelm of the day-to-day life that we have. Of course, you know, it's hard to juggle lots of things. Our brain, we all have limits. But the ADHD brain is more than just struggling to juggle. Like, it will impact functioning. And I think what's really important is to recognize that the burnout piece, because that's what usually brings clients to see me, is when they feel this visceral burnout. Like the lady who came on our podcast, Michaela Thomas, she talks about having two states, meerkat and sloth. So when you're in the meerkat, you're all excited. You get easily distracted by the squirrel. Everything is, you know, sparkly. Everything's exciting and sort of, you know, you've got a bit of a skip and a buzz. But then you burn out and then you're like a sloth. Mm. And my clients will describe the state where they just cannot get up for anything. Like, nothing is worth it. And it's emotional because often it comes with lots of self-criticism. Like, what's wrong with me? Why can't I just do the small task? Everything feels unsurmountable. But it's also deeply physical. Like, they're exhausted. And that's because they've just had probably a period of hyperactivity and getting everything done. And they're exhausted by that. So it's kind of like a feast and a famine. Mm. And I think that's different to the overwhelm of day-to-day life.
Amanda, you know we love the Meat Club, but you know what's even better than their premium ethically sourced meats?
What's that?
Getting $250 worth of your shopping for free. And that's exactly what we're going to be doing in our season 5 giveaway.
All you have to do is show us the delicious meals that you make using the Meat Club products. Tag at the 40s formula and at the Meat Club SG on Instagram or TikTok, and you stand a chance to win $250 worth of the Meat Club goodies.
It can be a photo, a reel, and don't worry if your account's private. Just drop us a DM and we'll count your entry.
We'll be picking one lucky winner at the end of the season. So make sure to submit all those delicious meals before June 5th.
It's time to jump in the kitchen and get cooking, and we cannot wait to see what you make. So you mentioned that people with ADHD are driven by dopamine or stimulants or deadlines, whatever it is that gets their gets them motivated. Does that then that to me seems like a chemical imbalance in the brain?
Mm.
So could you explain how that could be happening, or if it is something that can be explained?
I mean, I'm not a neuroscientist, but one of so I won't pretend to be.
We did just have one on, so we'll get her.
Oh yeah, get them to speak about that. But there is a dopamine hypothesis in that ADHD, because it's driven by interest, is actually driven by dopamine. And so what you'll see is the ADHD brain will mine for dopamine. So that hyperfocus that we see with the ADHDers is that they'll get really excited by something. And it could be anything. It could be, you know, furniture painting. And they'll paint every piece of furniture. That has happened to me personally.
This sounds like a very real life example.
Yeah, yeah, it is. Until there's nothing brown in the house. Yeah. And then I'm done.
Yeah.
And then I'll find something else that's sparkly and new and exciting, right? And that's what we call the dopamine hypothesis, because they mine the dopamine until there's nothing left. Mm-hmm. And then when there's nothing left, they can't understand why they did all that. Like, what was so interesting about this? Because it's no more excitement left. Mm-hmm. It's no longer novel or a challenge and no longer of interest. So you're right. There is a dopamine. We talk about the dopamine mining, and it helps my clients to understand their behaviors. Like, why is it that I can find this so easy, but something else so hard? And that, once we have that understanding, there's a compassion that comes with it, which I think is so important. But also it helps us organize our day so that we keep the challenge and the novelty driving some of the behaviors that we find harder. So, for example, you can create, I have clients who time themselves doing the dishes.
Oh, that's a quite interesting
idea. That would literally like motivate me zero, but I can totally see how for the ADHD person this could be a fun game.
Yeah. It's like, how quickly can I do it today? Like creating a challenge in the things that are most difficult.
Yeah.
So it's like gamifying things that could be mundane, which will then give you something to feel excited by.
Yeah.
That's very interesting.
Yeah. It's like using what you know about the wiring of your brain.
To your advantage.
To your advantage, exactly.
And I think everyone can benefit from that tip, right? I think neurodivergent, neurotypical.
Yeah.
I think that everyone, you know, coming from the lens of fitness and nutrition, which is my profession, it's like I'm always telling my clients to gamify an aspect of their fitness and nutrition life. Because saying, okay, drink a protein shake every day. Okay. Boring. Yeah. But what if every day you had a new recipe for that protein shake and you woke up in the morning and opened your inbox and it was like a completely different recipe from yesterday, you know, and it felt like something like a reward that you got every morning as opposed to the drudgery of the protein shake, you know? So I think we can all benefit from exactly what you're saying.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. Making it exciting and interesting, right? Yeah.
Novelty, novelty is a driver, I think.
Of course.
Yeah, all sorts of mundane habits.
Of course, absolutely.
No, talking about protein shakes,
Yeah.
Can nutrition or all lifestyle habits help people who are struggling with ADHD or being neurodivergent in any way?
I mean, if we think about our cognitive functioning, right? So from a diagnostic perspective, we know that when we do, you know, when we look at ADHD, is they struggle with their executive functioning. And what is our executive functioning? Essentially, it's the part of our brain which sits sort of here in the front of our brain. And it is responsible for everything from organizing and planning, being able to predict, set goals. So it's a very important part of our brain. But in the ADHDer brain, this part is under, we talk about it being under-resourced. It's almost like it's like an office that is running short of admin staff. It's not my metaphor.
I do like that.
Yeah. I wish it were. It's not mine. There's a fantastic podcast called The Neurodivergent Woman, and they came up with that metaphor, and it's fantastic. So the idea is that we're under-resourced in that area, which means that we have to make decisions. Who do we use? What do we use our admin support for? And I think nutrition and self-care play a part in our cognitive functioning. And so it will help. So, for example, I know clients who use caffeine is phenomenal for the ADHD brain until it's too much.
Mm. How do you know how much is too much?
Well, Jasmine's like, I'm instantly worried.
I think we know because we get over-agitated. Okay. So when we think about medication for ADHD, some people use medication. Mm-hmm. And it's the same function, much, much stronger than caffeine. Mm-hmm. It's a stimulant.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So often when I talk to my ADHDers, I'll ask them about how they use caffeine and dark chocolate. And they'll be like, oh, I do use it to give me a bit of a step up to get me ready for something. So you can use nutrition in that way, but just to be mindful where it goes too much. Mm. When we use too much of the stimulant or when we use food to slow us down, because sometimes we can overeat. That's one of the presentations we see often with ADHD is binge eating mm-hmm. and bulimia. Mm-hmm. Either it's because we've been very self-critical about ourselves and we're using food to soothe us, or we're impulsive and we just can't stop. So we can see that certain foods can be a bit triggering for the bulimia, for example, and the binge eating, and then we have to be more mindful about that. But to recognize that sometimes food can help soothe. Mm. You know, having food that feels a bit more like a comfort can be helpful. And in terms of cognitive functioning, I think a lot about sleep with ADHD. Like, we really need to prioritize our sleep. Mm. Often ADHDers don't sleep as much and they don't need as much. So be mindful of how much you actually need. Because that will help your functioning and your emotional regulation, because that's the other piece we see with ADHD is with women, is they can have really quite explosive anger. And if you haven't slept, that's even worse. Or menopausal, perimenopause, just even worse. Yeah. I mean, the hormonal piece is real too.
You mentioned a few kind of similar thematics in the ADHD brain, right? So you mentioned kind of being, you know, hyper-focused on something and then crashing into burnout. Yeah. You've mentioned binge eating and then potentially purging or perhaps going through a period of restriction, right? So yeah. Kind of this feast or famine, I believe, is a language that you used. What type of cognitive techniques do you use with clients to help them bridge what I'm also seeing as the all or nothing mindset, right? Either I'm super on or I'm so off I can't get out of bed, right? Yeah. How do you help them get into that gray area?
When you're in hyper-focus and you're excited about something, it's really hard to slow down. So there's a few things that I do is I'll get people to journal and think about what they're doing and how it's working. So putting their, for example, if they're really into a project, not starting the project straight away. You know, at 5 a.m. in the morning.
Yeah.
Because they might just keep going the whole day and neglect everything else.
Got it.
There's a technique that we say stop, think, do. Just take a moment when you walk into a room, stop, think what you need to, what is it that's most important that you need to do in this moment? Do it. Don't leave it to later. Do it right now. And so when we have things that are novel and exciting, I tell people not to do that first thing, to sort of structure their day where they have the day peppered with these exciting things, but they do the things that they have to do before. Because otherwise they'll beat themselves up over not having done whatever it might be, the food shopping or even parenting. One of the things that I find really validating to say to my ADHD community is that parenting can be painfully boring.
Yeah, and repetitive.
And repetitive.
You gotta get comfy in the repetition.
Yeah, and that's okay. Like, we live in a society where we're supposed to be joyous all the time as parents. And it's really depleting. Chris, my co-host, talks about that. You know, parenting is depleting. Mm-hmm. So how are we going to restore ourselves? And with an ADHD brain, it can be particularly depleting because it's not novel. It's incredibly repetitive. There's no challenge and there's no reward. Nobody's telling you you're doing a great job.
Hey, those waiting to be parents, get excited, okay? This is what's coming your way.
Yes. So I think organizing your day, creating structure, is really, really helpful cognitively. The other piece that I love is the self-compassion. You know, once we get to know, so part of the journey into exploring whether you have ADHD, be it through a formal process that I actually think can be very validating. So when you go through the process of diagnosis, even as an older adult, it can be very validating, because as you do all the questionnaires and the tests and you see, wow, this is really hard for me. No wonder I find it so difficult to do admin, or no wonder I feel like I'm so impulsive. Like the tests will show. So the process can be very validating. And I think that, or you can just, you know, read about it and see whether you recognize yourself in the podcast like this one, or in, you know, the, there's lots of good quality, and be mindful to look for good quality material. But once you start to recognize yourself and you can validate, wow, this is hard, because it is hard, because these are things that I can't do. Just like somebody who has, you know, any other chronic condition like diabetes, or, you know, struggles with physical impairments. You know, these are challenging things for my brain to do. Mm-hmm. So having that self-compassion reduces the stress load, which helps us function cognitively. So self-compassion is a superpower. Mm. I think it is for everybody.
Yeah, I agree.
But especially for the ADHD brain.
So I was actually going to ask whether it's worth finding out later in life.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, I understand, you know, if you're a child in school, maybe it can help them get through the education system, you know, because there's just so much that you need to get through, mm-hmm. and it might give you that additional support that you need. But I'm looking at myself and I'm thinking, okay, do I have it? Maybe, I don't know. But do I need to know now? I feel like I've gotten through
you've developed your coping strategies around it, whether you have it or not.
Exactly. Yeah. So I figured out what works for me. Yeah. You know, I'm getting through and I feel okay. Is it worth finding out for sure?
It depends where you're at with it. Mm. So when I have clients who come to me who've had, you know, a lifetime of anxiety and depression, and often clients who have ADHD, there's just this sense of there's something inherently wrong with me, mm-hmm. that they've carried their entire life. It's not just today. It's not during this period of stress. It's something they felt throughout their lives. And so understanding what that piece is, is very validating and very powerful. So it's not that there's something inherently wrong with me, it's that I'm wired differently, that I think differently. That when I see something sparkly and new, I get so excited that I need to follow it. Mm-hmm. And I forget about the other things that are not as exciting. But that's because my brain is wired like that. It's not that there's something wrong with me. So through the process of assessment, we can understand how we're wired differently. And I think that can be very validating. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So is it worth it? It depends. It depends how much you're struggling with it. Mm-hmm. Self-identification is also incredibly useful. I know a lot of people who've chosen that path and that's been enough for them. But some people want to really understand how they're thinking and making sense of the world. And that's how the process of assessment can really help.
You mentioned medication earlier and stimulants. Mm. Do you think that most people or all people need to go on medication, or is it only for certain people? What's your sort of thoughts on that?
Some people can really benefit from it. It depends the level of dysfunction. Mm-hmm. It depends how much you're struggling. So what we find, the medication really helps with focus. So if you find that, you know, I've had clients that really procrastinate. Like procrastination is a big problem for them. Often what we find with people who procrastinate is that they'll procrastinate till the last minute. And what? Because it's a boring task. Mm. And what will happen last minute is stress goes up. And as we know, the ADHD brain is driven by stress and challenge. So we'll start the task at 10 p.m.
Mm-hmm. So you get that little high.
Yeah, exactly. So these are the people who are, I thrive under pressure kind of.
But the problem with doing it at 10 p.m. and finishing at 3 a.m. is that you don't do it well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So then comes in the self-criticism. And then that's where moods issues happen. You beat yourself up and then you start again, you procrastinate. Look, what a terrible job I did last time. What's the point? Who cares? 10 p.m. again, and we're in that cycle. Mm. So medication can help to improve your focus in those moments. Medication also helps with hyperactivity if you have a lot of hyperactivity. So it kind of depends. And I'm an advocate of, you know, if you're really struggling with this, give it a go. It's not forever. It's not the same as going on an antidepressant medication where it takes weeks to see effects and then it takes weeks to come off it, if not months for some people. This is something that you can try and see. The complexity with the medication for ADHD is finding the right dose. You have to find that sweet spot because initially you can get quite agitated, struggle with sleep, struggle with food, as in, you know, you go off your food. So finding the right dose can take a while, but coming off it doesn't give you the same withdrawals that you do with other medications, like for anxiety and depression.
I've heard that using nutrition in the sense that you are eating sort of whole foods, keeping out the ultra processed foods, maybe even obviously exercising, cold plunges, saunas, you know, all of these sort of biohacking techniques that people use to live longer can also help. Do you think that's also the case? Have you seen that with people who use lifestyle as a way to manage some symptoms?
I mean, I don't know the research on it. I think that what I see in my practice is that exercise is fantastic because exercise gives you lots of endorphins and dopamine, and that's the thing that will help us drive and regulate our emotions. So exercise is definitely very important. And eating in such a way that it doesn't affect your sleep. So what we see is that we get very agitated because we overdo it with caffeine and then we drink at night to slow us down and then we don't sleep well. So then we're back on the caffeine. I do see those cycles. Or a lot of sugar to, you know, inevitably sort of get us moving a bit faster. But then that has a has a down. So I do think that these sort of peaks and troughs can be influenced by food. I don't know about the ice bath plunges. I don't know about those pieces, but I have seen sleep and food and exercise can be really important.
You talk about emotional dysregulation, and I'm guessing that can have a big impact on your relationships as well. How does somebody with ADHD go through a relationship, and what sort of challenges do they encounter?
As you can imagine, it can be quite complex. So from an early age, women with ADHD, women with ADHD tend to be super empaths. That's another fallacy. Like the idea that we, if we have somebody who presents with ADHD and even autism, that they don't empathize, that's just absolutely wrong. They tend to be, because they recognize that they have some difficulties picking up cues, they tend to be tremendously good at watching humans. And they'll watch from a very early age, hence the masking. And the problem with the masking is that it's very tiring. So we know that ADHD is a very, very sensitive to rejection. So this rejection sensitivity dysphoria is real. It's a real problem. So the fear of being rejected hits very, very deep. And so they'll be, from a very young age, we'll be trying to see if there's a risk of being rejected. So sometimes we see ADHD girls being quite socially anxious and trying to mask their anxiety, or, you know, being a little bit more the clown, you know, trying to fit in. And that's because they're trying to mask what they recognize is a type of, it's a difference. They're slightly different. They're more likely to say things, be impulsive with what they say, and they notice that that's different to the other girls in the class that perhaps are not saying things. So this level of masking that goes on and this fear of being rejected will really influence how we respond in relationships. So then we fast forward and, you know, we're now starting to have boyfriends and partners. We're going to be incredibly anxious about how they think about us. So we're masking. We're not being our authentic selves in a relationship. And we're wondering if they're going to stay with us. Are they going to criticize us? Because we will have had a long history of criticism, right? Girls get, just like boys, what's wrong with you? Why can't you just sit still? Why are you always late? Can't you get yourself more organized? Like there was somebody who, actually Michaela on our podcast quoted that by the age of 10, they've had about 12,000 instances of criticism, and that just keeps going. So you're an adult woman, you're in a relationship, and it can be even with friendships, and you're expecting to be criticized because that's your history. Your history tells you you get things wrong. Your history tells you that you misunderstand people, that people think you're weird or you're different, or you're quirky. So you're busy masking and you're busy waiting to be rejected. So what happens is that perhaps you do something in the relationship and somebody responds to you, you know, even maybe neutrally, but you misinterpret it as they don't like me.
It feels like a personal attack.
You're more likely to perceive it as a personal attack. And then because of the ADHD and because you've been sort of burrowing all this sort of pain, there's more likely to be an explosion of emotion. So what we see in relationships is that many women talk to me about how angry they get because their partner said, hey, what happened to dot, dot, dot? You know, where are the keys? What happened to the plan of going out for Sunday brunch? The woman will explode. Be like, what do you mean? What are you saying about me? And will get very, very upset. And perhaps it is a neutral sort of jab. And perhaps it's just a complaint and not a criticism, but it will be internalized as a criticism. So this will be a problem that I see. So getting easily triggered by their partners, experiencing more levels of criticism or interpreting it as criticism, that tends to be a problem in relationships. The other piece that's quite interesting is that the ADHD woman is often a very busy woman. She just doesn't sit still. You know, even in the evenings, you know, sitting down to watch Netflix, you'll be up and about doing things. And that can be quite irritating to partners. Mm-hmm. So that will be a piece. But once you know that that's what's happening, you can say all of this to your partner, which is why I think understanding whether you have ADHD can be very powerful because it's a way to communicate with your partner what's happening. I'm also a couples therapist. The most important skill in a relationship is the ability to talk. And I don't believe there are any conversations that we can't have with our partner as long as we know how to have them. And so having that language to go, you know, I have this rejection sensitivity. So when I hear words like, what happened to the plan, or why are we running late, whatever it might be, I take it very personally. Mm. It really hits me hard. And what I need from you is for you to say it more softly, whatever it might be that you need, but to explain to your partner that, you know, we're in it together. This is teamwork. This is how it lands. I know it's not your intention. Could you help me out here? And the same with, you know, I'm a big believer in teamwork when it comes to admin. In the ADHD world, we talk about time blindness, which I love as a term. The ADHD brain just doesn't calculate time the same way as in your typical brain. ADHDers will try and squeeze things in with 5 minutes that actually is a task that should take 20. And suddenly you're 20 minutes late. And your partner's like, I can't believe we're here again. So this is where you can lean on each other and your partner can go, honey, we have 5 minutes. You can't do anything in these 5 minutes. So just come with me and let's get in the car. Mm-hmm. And that's teamwork.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I think that's really important in relationships, is to recognize that we're all different and some of us are wired differently and we could do with a little more support.
And it sounds like, you know, in that exact example, right? So you have an ADHD partner and a neurotypical partner. Mm. What if we are talking about two ADHD partners? Mm. Are there different issues then that come to the front?
Sometimes it can be a really fantastic partnership, especially if the topics of interest are very similar. Mm-hmm. Because there's nothing more exciting than talking about your topic of interest. Like if you have somebody who's an ADHDer or autistic and you know their topic of interest, you wouldn't make them happier mm-hmm. than to talk about that. Mm-hmm. And so you can be incredibly aligned if you're two neurodivergent individuals in a partnership because you know what it's like to talk about the topic of interest, for example, or you know how hard it is mm-hmm. to organize. So there can be teamwork in that too, a recognition that we're similar in as much as we have very similar challenges, and how can we work it out together? Sometimes I've seen that work really well because you don't have to explain it as much.
Yeah.
You kind of get it.
And I get it on the high end, if that makes sense, like on the shared interest end. I'm thinking of a couple that I know specifically who are both very outwardly communicative about their ADHD struggles, right? But then, you know, my question is always, then who's doing the admin? Like, who is the one who, like, is the grounded person? Because they both, I think that's something that they express in their struggles as a couple. It's all great because, they're in the world of finance, right? So they're, like, really into the markets, and they're really into Bitcoin, and they're really into that. But then it's like, at the end of the day, they look at each other, and it's like, did you buy the shares today? Like, did you actually pull the trigger on that investment? And it's like, oh. And then the markets are closed, you know, and it's like, oh, some like that last bit of follow through was the missing piece.
And I think it's a great example. I think that's where you have to get external support. Mm-hmm. Like, I'm a big believer in recognizing our limitations and working in the things that we're great at and getting help for the things that we struggle with.
I think this is that's why I love my helper.
Yes.
Because she has taken all of that stuff off my hands. I don't have to think about it anymore.
You know, since we both work in the coaching field, I always say you can almost always tell a valuable coach because they have a coach in some aspect of their life, right? And I would say the same for therapists, right? Effective therapists often have therapists.
I feel like therapists need therapists because they carry on.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah,
for sure.
On a separate note, I heard somewhere that everyone has a little bit of ADHD or a little bit of neurodivergence. So is it a case of you either have it or you don't have it? Mm. Or is it a spectrum where you might have it a little bit or you have it a lot?
So in the ADHD community, I would say, and the autistic community, it's quite insulting to think of somebody having a little bit of it because it can be really quite challenging to have it. I think what we all have a little bit of is difficulties. You know, we've all got a executive functioning. Some of us are better at it and some of us are worse. Mm-hmm. I think if we think of ADHD and autism, if we're talking about that too here, I think you either have it or you don't. Mm-hmm. You're either wired in this way or you're not. Mm-hmm. When you talk to somebody with ADHD about what their moments of burnout are like, that is serious. That is real. Mm-hmm. Where they might not be able to get out of bed because they have absolutely exhausted themselves. And you can't have a little bit of that. To be diagnosed with ADHD, there has to be an impact on functioning. That's real.
Yeah.
So I guess for me, when people talk about a little bit or, you know, that it's a fad, it's just trendy to have ADHD. When you talk to the community, those that have it, it's real. It's not trendy. Mm. It can be really, really hard. And also something that we haven't talked about, and it's not talked about a lot, the autistic research is far, far ahead of the ADHD research in women. Mm-hmm. ADHD research will catch up. But what we know is that there's a lot of chronic health conditions that come with ADHD and autism. Somebody, Jennifer Kemp, who was also on our podcast, she talks about, you know, autism is in every cell of our body. So it's not just our cognitive functioning that's impacted. Our whole body is impacted. And we're looking at that in the ADHD community too. We often see chronic fatigue with ADHD. We see immunity difficulties with chronic pain. So it often comes with migraines. There's a whole facet that comes along with the ADHD that can also impact functioning. So I think what we have a little bit of is perhaps a tendency to be more excited by things, you know, struggle to plan, struggle with cognitive functioning, but I don't think we have a little bit of ADHD.
Mm. What are your thoughts on gut health and its relationship, if there is a relationship, to ADHD or autism spectrum disorder?
Yeah, there's a lot in the research world around this, and that's really, really interesting because we see so much correlation. Mm-hmm. A lot of people with ADHD and autism have gut issues and have had from the get-go. In fact, when we look at young children getting diagnosed, they've often had reflux or you know, gastric issues as little people. And so I think that there's more and more being discovered in that area. And we know that the gut holds, you know, a lot of serotonin.
Yeah.
Which will influence mood, which will influence our functioning in many, many ways. And I'm really interested to see where we go with it.
Are there any myths about ADHD that you'd like to bust?
The one that you just said about, you know, can I have a little bit of it? Mm-hmm. I think is an important myth, because it's important to protect those that have a diagnosis and that, you know, really do recognize the challenges that they face. I think the other myth is that women don't have it as much as mm-hmm. men. I've been in the world of psychology for over 20 years. And when I trained, it was boys, you know, 4 to 1,
wow.
4 boys for every girl. Mm. That's changing.
Mm.
It's been a radical shift to start looking at women. So these high achieving, high performing women how have they kept it together has been through all this overcompensation. And really underneath it is the ADHD.
Mm.
And I think that's a myth that we need to bust, that women don't have ADHD and that girls don't have ADHD. Because I think there's a lot of suffering that happens with undiagnosed women and girls.
So for anyone out there who either has ADHD or thinks they may have ADHD, where can they go to find out more?
There's a few websites now, more and more, there's a lot of clinical psychologists that are coming out as ADHD and autistic. And I think they're brilliant to follow because they have good quality research. So one is Michaela Thomas mm-hmm. from the Thomas Connection. She's fantastic. She's in the UK. Jennifer Kemp is in Australia. She does a lot of writing and has done a lot of podcasts on it as well. There's a few websites. There's the Neurodivergent Woman, which is a podcast, and they also have a website with some fantastic resources. There's also Embrace Autism, which has some screeners as well that women can use to see if they can self-identify. So I would seek support from psychologists, psychiatrists in the area.
Mm.
If we're going to sort of look through social media and the internet, I would make sure I'm looking at high quality content
mm-hmm.
because this is a big deal to be looking and exploring into ADHD.
And we'll put all of this into the show notes as well.
Oh, great.
And Emma, it has been absolutely amazing having you here on the 40s Formula and sharing all your insights about ADHD and neurodivergence. But before we go, we do want to ask one final question, and that is, what's your 40s Formula, especially for women who either are or think they may be struggling with ADHD? What sort of advice would you give them to help them thrive through this, despite this?
I think we always think about, you know, at the end of the day, what truly matters are our relationships. So really protecting relationships. But I think that's something that mostly we're thinking about more and more. I think the piece that's really important is actually what we've touched on, which is self-compassion.
Mm-hmm.
You know, learning to be kind. As women, we've taken on so much. And we've been told that we need to take on more. You know, to be valuable to society, we have to carry the load at home. We have to carry the load in relationships often. You know, some of us are working women, or even those of us who are homemakers, we tend to carry the biggest load. So self-compassion is very important, and learning to set boundaries, learning to say no and ask for help.
Yeah.
Like, there's nothing to be ashamed of, because if we can't support us and we can't be well, we can't help anybody else. So when we think about relationships, often I think it just encourages women to subjugate more.
Mm.
Like, I have to do yet another thing. Well, let's start saying no and thinking about, what is it that gives me a sense of purpose in this world? What makes me feel good about me? And I think self-compassion, you know, being kind, helps us make room for those questions.
I think that's amazing.
Yeah, it's beautiful.
I think everyone can take on a little bit of self-compassion for sure.
Yeah.
Thank you so much, Emma. It's been wonderful having you here.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
It's been so fun.
Guys, you know we love coffee. And if you want to show us some love, you know you can always get us one.
Just visit buymeacoffee.com/the40s formula.
Cheers.
Before we go, please remember to hit subscribe and take a moment to support the 40s Formula by leaving a review on your favorite podcast platform.
Your reviews will help us to reach more people and allow us to continue to bring valuable content. It should only take a moment, and it's a free way for you to support the show.
You can also stay updated with the 40s Formula by following us on Instagram at the 40s Formula, all one word. We share behind-the-scenes insights, episode updates, and much more, so please be sure to hit that follow button.
We appreciate your time and support. Thank you for being part of this community, and we'll be back next week for more empowering conversations with inspiring guests.
Bye. Bye.
We had three that were tough.
Yes. Yeah. I think that's evolution for you. Mm. Keeps us going. Otherwise, humanity would have ended.
Mm. Oh, God, yeah. You're right.
Long time ago.
Yeah.
We wouldn't have time to actually have babies.